Welcome to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look, where you, the investor, get to listen as Chris Perry grills the best and the brightest in the corporate sector to help you find out who's the wheat and who's the chaff. Listen in.
The opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily shared by people who are wrong.
So welcome to the Equity Guru podcast. My name is Chris Perry. You are probably familiar with me from such classic podcasts as A Sit Down Talk with Jeet. And then I'm just kidding. There's no classic podcasts in the Equity Guru range, but this might be one of them. So this podcast has been, 2 years in the making, I think?
Yeah, I think so.
So I'm sitting there with Anthony Brown, CEO of Amped Game Technologies, which is going public whenever the exchange decides that there's been enough.
Amped Technologies now,
okay, so it's a bit more broad. So Amped's deal is it's high-performance computing as opposed to the AWS model of one-size-fits-all. We'll get into the details on that in a second, but the origin story of this, at least as far as you and me go, goes back to a Dungeons & Dragons game in White Rock.
I'm going to admit this publicly now, is that what you're telling me?
That's what I'm telling you.
Okay.
I ask the hard questions. Is it true that you were at one point a dwarf?
Yes, that's right.
We played a D&D game and found some common connection in terms of your wife being an exec at Hemco, which had gone public, and you guys had a nice exit there.
It did work out rather well, yeah.
And so now
Canada went public with Varshney Capital. And then Aurora came in, bought 51%, my wife's retired.
Instead of you joining her retired, you've gone out and decided that you're going to conquer the next phase of the internet.
I can't stop what I've been doing. I mean, you know, I've over the years, I'm about a 25-year entrepreneur. It's in the blood. It's not something that
you never stop.
Stops, no.
This is why Rupert Murdoch, who has more billions than the next three billionaires put together, is 192 and still out there trying to get another billion. Like it gets in your blood.
It does. Yeah. It at some point it becomes, you know, maybe a little bit less about the money and more about the game.
Mm-hmm. The building.
More about, building these organizations, building these technologies, changing the world.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, I had a company called Seven Group that I ran for 12 years, as a partner and as a co-founder. Seven Group was the number one supplier of digital media technology as far as the infrastructure inside these studios for animation, visual effects, and video game studios in Canada. And we got to work with all kinds of great companies, Technicolor and Universal and Disney and Digital Domain, Activision, EA, all the big names. It was a lot of fun. But what we found was that, supplying technology from companies like IBM and Dell and HP and all that sort of stuff doesn't create a very valuable business.
Right.
So the idea then became like, how do we leverage this and how do we grow this? So we folded Seven Group into a new company under the umbrella company 7G Entertainment to start a publishing company called IGP, which was Infinite Game Publishing, and we published MechWarrior Online. Of which I know you are a fan.
It's still out there swinging.
It's still out there swinging.
How many years later is it?
Oh, geez. I think we launched it in 2012.
Okay.
Yeah. So, been out there for 7 years now.
That's a decent run.
Yeah. And MechWarrior 5 is coming out.
MechWarrior 5 is coming out September, mid-September?
I'm not going to say. That's up to Russ, the CEO
that's
of Piranha,
the date that I've seen.
To say. Yeah, no. I have no secrets, but let's just say this year.
Okay.
It'll be coming out later this year.
So that'll be a good thing because, not to get too distracted, but my big regret with the whole esports gaming world right now, there's no fucking new games.
Yeah.
Like everyone's so bored. It's been a couple of Battle Royale spinoffs and then what? Like,
well, we got Borderlands coming up in September.
Like it's not a new game. It's an old game.
That's true. It's the sequel. That's right.
Like I was so amped for the new Fallout, and then blah.
Well, hey, it's MechWarrior 5. It's not a new game either.
It's been a while.
Yeah. 2002, I think, was MechWarrior 4.
Right.
It's been a while.
And there's clearly a desire for it because that's why MechWarrior Online is still going, even though it looks like it was, Atari Asteroids era. It's not exactly the latest, greatest tech.
No, well, you know, the MechWarrior 5, which, you know, I've had the privilege to play, and we did have a vertical slice released at MechCon last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it makes full use of Unreal 4, mm-hmm. right? It's a pretty.
It looks pretty great.
Yeah, yeah. You got a chance to play it as well, right?
I haven't played it, but I've seen many demos and trailers, and it doesn't look terrible.
No.
And I did a little undercover work amongst the Twitch community of MechWarrior fans that are still playing online.
Yeah.
And it seems like they're all extremely revved for what's to come.
Yeah.
But let's get back.
Digress. So
the reason that I like Amp, and that I, you know, I'm going to take some credit for working with you for a while and getting you to the place where you're ready to get public.
Your credit is due.
Absolutely. You know, esports has been a thing that people are talking about since blockchain fell over as the next thing, but no one knows where the money is in esports, and no one really knows how to do it right. And that's why it's still dragging around. As soon as someone like a Francesco Aquilini says, I'm buying into a team, suddenly all the old guys from the markets who don't really know what they're buying are just like, how much money do you need? Because you're clearly going to know what's up, and we don't know what's up. What I liked about Amped was that 2 years ago, your strategy wasn't let's follow what everyone else is doing. Your strategy was, in 3 years, this is all going to be meaningless. What we really want to do with the internet can't be done under the existing infrastructure, which was built to host GeoCities websites and e-commerce. It needs the next generation so we can get to the Ready Player One stage, right? The Oasis.
Right. Yeah.
And so your strategy wasn't to just go out there and do what could have made you easy money for a year or two. It was to do what wouldn't make you any money for the short term, but would eventually put you smack dab in the middle of a ferocious fight between titans that also don't know what the hell to do to get to that next stage.
That's one way of looking at it.
What's the major difference between your high performance computing data centers and strategy and, say, the Amazon AWS that we all know and hate,
yeah,
or the Google Stadia that we've all seen the trailer for and laughed at?
Yeah, I was at GDC when they announced Stadia, by the way.
Were you just sort of jumping up and down and giggling?
Well, no, actually, when they first announced it, it was like, oh, no, really? Like, Google's figured it out. They're actually going to do this thing. This is, you know, I mean, they're big company, boy. If they really put their focus there, this could
this,
you know,
100 ping thing, yeah, could really,
yeah,
roll.
Yeah, and then you read the fine print,
right,
and that's what we did. We read the fine print on it. We find out that it's, you know, 100 milliseconds per button push. And the reality is, if you live in San Francisco and you like Assassin's Creed, and you don't mind if the game's a little bit wonky, it doesn't run as well as when you run it on your PS4 or whatever,
mm-hmm,
then okay, you got something there,
mm-hmm,
which really means you don't really have anything yet.
Anything,
I mean,
at all.
Okay, so there's a few pieces to this. I'll cover it in two sections. The first section is that, you know, esports started in Asia. And in Asia, we have a concentration of populace that's nothing near what we achieve in North America and Europe. You know, if you're in Seoul, you have a whole population of Canada,
mm-hmm,
right? 30 million people in Seoul,
mm-hmm,
right? They all have gigabit to their house. They have the server that they're playing on is in the basement,
mm-hmm,
right? PUBG, one of the biggest games ever, one of the biggest games in the world when it came out, was out of Korea. And the guys over at Bluehole said, hey, well, let's bring it to North America. They didn't know any better either. They put it on Azure,
mm-hmm,
right? Didn't work out so well.
It's been the major problem for that game. And it was the genesis for what created Fortnite.
Yeah, well, it was the invention of the shooting the tree meme,
mm,
right? Where you had, you know, people shooting at each other, nothing happening, and then a few seconds later, the tree would resolve that, you know, they've been shooting for the last few seconds. Yeah.
Right.
So the challenge that exists in North America and Europe is that we just don't have that infrastructure in the ground yet,
right?
Cloud companies like Amazon, like Google, like Microsoft Azure, like all the big names, they started off with e-commerce as the main impetus for building that infrastructure. Then it moved into things like streaming video and YouTube and Netflix and that, you know, all that kind of stuff. And you know, for that stuff, it works great. But if you want to have that kind of stadium experience in your house, if you want to, you know, be in the Oasis from Ready Player One,
mm-hmm,
you need high performance computing, not distributed computing, and you need it in the city.
Mm-hmm.
that you're actually in. You have to, like, you know, this, you can't be, you know, connecting to servers in California with AWS,
right,
and expect not to have latency issues,
right.
Right? Latency is a factor of the speed of light, right? It's also a factor of the architecture, the infrastructure, that, you know, distributed versus high performance computing, which I, you know,
it's also your fans with. It's the biggest bottleneck in gaming right now. It is. Like, you know, I'm a self-professed Rocket League player for a couple of years.
Yeah.
The biggest frustration I have with that game is it takes three tries to get a game happening because someone of the six people in the game hasn't connected right, game ends.
Right.
The server doesn't quite catch up to everybody. The game is canceled. And this has been going on for years.
Yeah.
And for all the changes that they've made in this particular game, which is one of the more popular games, you still have the big tournaments happening with 50,000, 100,000 people watching, NBC showing it at 2 o'clock in the morning, and the game stops.
Yeah.
And everyone's got to just sort of sit there and look at each other, and the
broadcast is fill time. From you saying, like, is this something you can fix?
Oh, my Lord.
The answer is yes. I mean, it's,
It was FIFA 19 championships I was watching.
That's what it was, yeah.
And for half an hour, like, everyone is just standing, just like, what do we do?
Yeah, so look, the essence of what AMPT is doing is fixing that inherent infrastructure problem. So if you want to look at it in terms of the esports industry or the video game industry,
mm-hmm.
it's a picks and shovels play.
Mm-hmm.
It's the, you know, if you look at traditional media, right, from television back in the day to movies, you had, you know, companies like telcos and cable companies like Shaw Cable and things like that. They were the guys that were putting the fiber in the ground, putting the switches in the buildings and delivering that content. Now there's a whole new level of fidelity, a whole new level of interaction that's required for content. And that old infrastructure just doesn't support it. So that's what we're building. Now, so that's one piece of the to answer the, you know, the initial question. The other piece was like, you know, well, Amazon, Google, aren't these guys just going to do this stuff? We got Stadia, we got, you know, all this stuff going on. Well, there's a few pieces to that answer, because it's the number one question I get from investors, right? Anybody who's invested in
Amazon. How is Amazon not going to stomp you into the ground? Yeah, you're
exactly,
a cockroach.
Exactly. And, you know, the first part of that answer is,
I love the fact that I've never seen you with a bigger smile than when you're answering this question.
Well, I've had to answer it enough, so it's, you know, it just rolls off the tongue now. But basically what we're dealing with here is, first of all, anybody who writes a business plan where the requirement to be successful is for Amazon to go out of business,
right,
probably a bad business plan.
Or we're going to be the next Amazon.
Or we're going to be Amazon the next of Amazon or whatever, right? The reality of the situation is that, first of all, you know, although everybody knows about Amazon, everybody knows about Azure and Google and maybe IBM and a few others, there's hundreds of billion-dollar market cap cloud companies out there in the world,
mm-hmm.
right? There's a lot of people building this infrastructure, but they're all building it in that distributed manner, right?
Let's be honest, though. Yeah. That's easier, and it's cheaper.
Yeah.
And you can say, we have a data center in Winnipeg, and some traffic's going to come to you and some's going to go out.
Yeah.
That's a, you know, that's the cornflakes are popular. Let's put the President's Choice version of cornflakes out there.
Well, also,
but what you're doing is saying,
if you've already invested billions into that infrastructure,
yeah, you don't,
and it's making you tons of money.
Yeah.
You're going to replace it with something.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that doesn't make any sense either.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if I were, you know, AWS or Google or whatever, you know, great, let somebody else build it, I'll buy them later.
You don't change it until some little asshole comes along and says, we're going to do the better version now. You know, like, it's like Blockbuster going, Netflix, adorable.
Yeah.
Let's see those guys make this work. What happened? Why are we bankrupt?
Yeah. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I don't think that there's much chance of AMPT driving, Amazon or Google out of business. What we're dealing with, though, is we're dealing with something where, you know, all the traditional methods of building out compute infrastructure for things like esports, for things like virtual reality, for things like AI, machine learning, for
heavy research,
all that sort of stuff.
Video rendering.
That's a different architecture. It's called high performance computing,
mm-hmm.
right? The difference is latency, right? And latency is what everybody talks about with esports, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can, you know, how many times has your kid said, oh, I got 60 milliseconds, oh my God. Only had 20 milliseconds. That's why.
It's all I hear from my kid's room. Right. I got 60 FPS.
Yeah.
It's like, good, you still lost.
Yeah, exactly. that latency issue is what is not being addressed by distributed computing. So the difference is, without getting too techy, I don't want to go too nuts on this part, besides the fact that I'd probably screw it up if I tried, is that, distributed computing is software switched, software firewalled, distributed storage, where all of the data is spread across all the servers. So sometimes one of the servers has to talk to another one of the servers to get the data, which just adds time, right? Mm-hmm. The next thing they do is they build giant 100,000 square foot data centers that have to service really large geographic areas. Right, so that last mile latency is based on the speed of light. It's how far away you are from that server. Yeah. Right, if you build a giant data center, you're going to have to service a lot of people, and you're going to have to service a big geographic area. So what we do is we do high performance computing, which is hardware switched, hardware firewall, array based storage, where all the servers have direct access to flash storage, very high speed storage or high speed data, and then we build them in urban data centers. Right, where the people or the end user is, mm-hmm. and then we give direct fiber connections to those end users to access the server. Right, so not going over the internet, they're going directly over fiber and soon over 5G mm-hmm. to the data center. Right, now, let's say you're a millennial. Right,
let's say
you're a millennial and you're looking for your new condo. You're moving downtown for your new job. Right, and the condo owner says, "Well, hey, if you're in my building." I have an AMP data center in the basement. And an AMP data center means you're going to get gigabit internet.
You're literally on the internet. Yeah. You're not connected to the internet.
You're living above.
You're sitting in a hub.
Yeah.
Right.
The chances are that one of the games that you really like to play is on a server in the basement. Mm-hmm. You get a whole new level of experience, right? The easy way to couch it is that, when the Oasis happens, the Ready Player One virtual reality multiplayer experience occurs, mm-hmm. it's not going to run on Azure.
No.
And it needs this type of high-performance computing to run on.
Right.
Right.
So why doesn't everybody do it?
Well, high-performance computing's hard. It's not something that you just do out of the gate. I have the lucky, experience of having 20 years of running companies that build high performance computing for digital media,
right?
For video game companies, animation and visual effects companies. And we understand what's involved in all of that. It's not a matter of just throwing a bunch of servers and GPUs.
We'll just use our FTP program to move our stuff from AWS right. to Azure.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah, it doesn't really work that way.
Right.
So the architecture behind what we do. And the other thing is that you have to be able to have those customer relationships to be able to avoid the whole build it and they will come scenario, right? There's two ways of doing this. One is I go out and I build this infrastructure and then I try and sell it,
right?
The other way to do it is the way we do it, which is we sell the infrastructure and then we build it, right? So we engage with the large clients, the guys that need, render, the guys that need a lot of giant games.
How much can we talk about in terms of deals that you've already got underway?
Well, I have to be very careful on that. We haven't gone public yet. Right. There's some announcements.
So let's keep it very generic. Let's say a large company has a project that involves a little bit of VR for a major amount.
We have some major projects that are announced. Let me give you one example.
Okay.
This one's outside the game industry.
Okay. Right?
There's something called the Canadian Digital Technology Supercluster, right? This is which Equity Guru is a part of. It's $1 billion fund by the federal government to build 5 superclusters across Canada. In Vancouver, the supercluster that we have here is the Canadian Digital Technology Supercluster. And they do things like, digital twinning, for example. Mm-hmm. In our case, we're doing the digital twin of airline factories.
So let's explain to people what that actually is for the Luddites amongst us. If an airline factory, I'm pretty sure people can figure out which one it is, wants to rebuild things, rebuild their process, streamline it so that everything is getting its absolute max, its heating is taken care of, its power is taken care of, its productivity is the way people interact with the machinery. What they're looking to do is to set sensors on all of that machinery and to funnel all the information about what's currently happening back to a system that they can then virtually rebuild and move things around on a VR platform, more or less, and let the AI figure out what combination of all this is the absolute most perfect way to build the physical factory that they're going to spend billions of dollars on. Did I get it?
You're pretty much there. I'm impressed. So I'm impressed.
The problem with this, I'm just taking it over from here.
Yeah, okay.
The problem with this is...
You can call me when you're ready.
So we're talking terabytes of information. We're talking like petabytes of information.
Yeah.
That if you were sending it to Azure, it would take you, what, 3 years, 4 years?
We did a calculation for a customer once that was looking at putting four petabytes of data into the cloud. And we won't say which cloud, just into the cloud. And, you know, a petabyte is 1,000 terabytes. Mm-hmm. It's like a terabyte is 1,000 gigabytes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of data. Mm-hmm. Petabyte's a lot. And so they think, well, we'll just put it in the cloud because this is how much the storage costs.
Mr. Microsoft is there saying.
The calculation, and let's say you're using, you know, a 150 meg connection in Vancouver.
Yep.
The calculation, I think for there, and I can't remember whether it was 2 or 4 petabytes. One of the two.
Mm-hmm.
The calculation worked out to be about 3 years.
Just to upload the information.
Let alone process it.
And then send it back. Not
an ideal way of doing it.
Right.
So what's your solution
in that case?
In the case of a digital twin, what you're dealing with is, as you say, you have a ton of sensors. It's not just, you know, things like telemetry and occlusion and the actual physical geometry of things. It's mm-hmm. also the heat and the moisture, the humidity, and the how fast things are moving, how close they are, proximity to other things,
mm-hmm.
et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a ton of data that you're gathering from all these various different sensors, and then you're building an exact duplicate of that, in not only in virtual reality from the perspective of being able to see it, but also all of that data goes into simulation software and AI software to be able to run simulations, right?
Right.
So to be able, like right now, this is the old way and it's still the way that's been done. If you have a giant manufacturing plant, the way they lay out the floor is they take cardboard cutouts of all the stations,
right,
and they actually lay it out on the floor and they walk through it and they, you know, try and see, well, will this, you know, will my elbows be banging into the next guy's elbows? You
go
know,
and buy cardboard stocks immediately.
this is how it's been done, right? So now with this new technology, and in our case, this is, it's called the Learning Factory Digital Twin Project, announced by the Canadian Digital Technology Supercluster, in conjunction with Avcorp, Boeing, Convergence, and Lamazoo. Lamazoo, who we met at the Cube together, And we're building and out this digital twin of a factory to allow them to do all these simulations and be able to do multiple iterations, be able to tell, okay, if we just tweak this tiny little bit, what's the impact on the delivery time? What's the impact on the meantime before failure of the part? What's the,
mm-hmm.
you know, what's the bonding thickness have to be of the glue that we use? Like, it goes into minutia detail.
Remember back in the day when, what was it? Was it ARPANET? Like, it was... A group was basically telling people, download our screensaver, and when your computer's not on,
SETI
at home.
Yeah,
SETI download at home. Our screensaver, and when your computer's not being used, the screensaver will fold protein cells and try and figure out ways for us to cure cancer using.
Well, in the case of SETI, it was that they could actually process signals from space to see.
There was a couple of them around at the same time.
There was a few different.
But the idea was, hey, we'll just get all this unused computer time and we'll put it all together and we'll do what would have taken us millions of hours in a couple of 100 days.
And that works great for chewing away at a big problem.
Right.
Right. But if you want to actually interact with that problem.
But it also took forever.
Yeah.
And it required the assistance of about 5 million people.
Yeah. Well, that's it. I mean, that's distributed computing.
Right.
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 The ability to interact with something like that, right, as it's being processed,
mm-hmm.
is virtually non-existent. It's not really possible.
Right.
Right. So it's a great way to stream data in one direction or another. It's a great way to process vast amounts of data over a period of time at cheap cost. And that's what the internet currently is built like.
But what you're looking for is you're looking for companies that are saying, we have a massive problem that requires a massively thought out solution. And we're not going to just plug it in the phone lines and let TELUS handle it. Like, we need some dark cable coming into a truckload of servers somewhere that isn't going to blow out our carbon footprint, which you also have a solution for.
Yeah, that's a cool part of what we do. So our data centers, and the first one we built over on West Second near Granville Island, repurpose the heat generated by all this compute, the heat that's surrounding buildings. And if the data center is big enough, we actually become a municipal utility and can put that heat as power back into the grid. And that lowers our power cost overall. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, one of the challenges that the old crypto guys had, you know, and that's why the Hive built their data center in Iceland,
right,
was, you know, how do we deal with all this heat? How do we get our power as cheap as possible? And how can we get as many, you know, hashes per kilowatt as possible, right?
Without it all melting.
We can't do that. For us to be able to supply that last mile or the lack of last mile latency, we need to have these data centers in the urban center. Right. So, if, you know, out of our data centers here in Vancouver, you can directly connect via fiber to your local ISP POP and then directly connect to our data center. Right. That gives you the ability to run at gigabit, 10 gigabit, 100 gigabit speeds as far as throughput is concerned. And latency is less than a millisecond.
Right.
Right. That's not something you can do with distributed computing.
And then you've also got the other opportunity there in that, most data centers work very hard to pull any sort of humidity out of the center.
Yeah, you're going the other way. We create clean drinking water with our condensing system.
So out of the air.
Out of the air, yes. So, well, that's the way an air conditioner works.
Sure.
Right? So it turns out that an inefficient air conditioner creates more water than an efficient air conditioner.
We've all experienced that.
Yeah. We've all experienced the air conditioner dripping outside the building. And that's what we're doing. So we're capturing the condensate off of our air conditioning systems, our condensing systems. And then running it through a process to, you know, filter it out and ultraviolet light and whatnot, and you end up with clean drinking water. In the case of our data center, the first one we built over on West Second in Vancouver here, it's at the waterfall building. And that waterfall feature can be data center water. Now, it's not very efficient to pump hundreds of gallons out of our air conditioning systems because they won't cool very well.
Right.
So there's a happy balance you have to reach that makes the efficiency work with whatnot. But when we have that data center full of servers, and that's pretty imminent, we're pretty much going to fill it up over the next 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
We can run the whole waterfall off of the data center. And if there was ever another Vancouver drought and the city says you got to turn off your water, we can say no.
It's our water. We made it.
We made it. We just keep running it. Look. When it comes to the green side of our business, it is important to us, and we want to be able to find better ways of dealing with all of this compute that has to be done.
Mm-hmm.
People talk about smart cities. People talk about esports and the requirements for dealing with latency. People talk about virtual reality and Oasis, about all that stuff. To be able to do that, you have to have local infrastructure. You have to build it in the city where it's being used. And that's a lot of compute, that's a lot of power, and that's a lot of electricity, and it's a lot of heat.
If you don't find
ways to deal with that, it's bad for the environment.
You're listening to the Equity.Guru podcast with your host, Chris Perry.
Just a quick note to tell you, sorry to interrupt your interview, but if you want more of these, you need to go to your podcast player, whatever that podcast player is, and go and subscribe to the Equity Guru podcast. You can do that through iTunes, you can do it through Google Play, you can do it through all the places. Equity Guru podcast. Do it now.
Welcome back.
To get your business model really working hard, like you say, you have to have a data center in all the cities where people might be. That's a big capital outlay. But what you're doing is basically saying, look, if we have a deal with a company making airplanes out of Seattle, as an example, we'll build one of these in Seattle to make that company happy for their particular use. They don't need to go out to Upper Bratislava with their data. They just need to go from their facility
And it applies to games as well. So let's say you're dealing with an online game that has a latency threshold that they want to service their customers with of 40 milliseconds. Okay. That may not give you the LAN experience that you would get in a stadium, but it is kind of generally accepted as, you know, pretty good coverage.
Your games are being developed to take advantage of that.
That's right. So to be able to do that, you need a minimum of two data centers just to cover North America.
Okay.
Right, an east and a west, so to speak.
Right.
And you're probably better off with three to get that kind of coverage.
Yeah.
So every time we do a new game, we deploy that game in different cities.
Okay.
Right. And, you know, every time we build out a new render farm, every time we build out a new virtual reality visualization platform, every time we build out a new AI platform, we're building four of those right now. And we will be able to announce who right after we go public.
So every one-off deal that you
every
have.
Every deal that we have gets built in
gives
in
you an extra data center.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't always result in a data center. So okay. So there's also co-location facilities.
Okay.
Right. So we'll build data centers as quickly as we can, right? It's the most efficient way for us to run our servers.
Right.
And it does have a cost savings by doing that as far as urban centers. But most urban centers also have co-location facilities. And in Vancouver, we've got CoLogix,
sure.
You know, Pier 1, those kind of guys, right? So we partner with them. We partner with Digital Realty, one of the largest suppliers of co-location space in the world. In fact, I think the largest.
The WeWork of data centers.
The WeWork of data centers, yeah. So you know, it's not ideal. They're not, these data centers, generally speaking, are not always designed to be able to handle the density of compute and the density of power that mm-hmm. we need. So we have to kind of, you know, do a little bit of give and take to deploy in those data centers. But the demand for this type of compute is so high that we, you know, you just can't build data centers fast enough to keep up with it.
Got it.
And our business model is designed to do the, you know, sell it and then build it, not build it and then sell it.
Right.
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 So as we hit that critical mass, and then part of the reason why we've gone public, as opposed to just raising private capital, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you were there
yeah.
for this whole process, and it's kind of your idea. And I know you can,
I'll take the criticism at one point.
The go public part was, you know, a lot of that was from long conversations that we'd had
yep.
About how I actually, you know, get AMP to achieve its goals.
Right.
And we realized that, you know, private money is fine to get things going and everything else. But once we hit that critical mass,
you
when we're in
scale.
Enough cities, we need to scale. And to do that, you need to be on the market.
Right.
You need to be on the public markets to be able to get that sort of institutional financing to really proliferate.
And, you know, there will come a point where the big boys will say, this mosquito bite on my ass is now big enough that it's a problem. One problem might be to go and spend billions of dollars trying to price war you and run you out of business. But the more likely result is, so what do you want for it?
Yeah, well, yes. There's a very high probability that at some point there's going to be that kind of an offer coming from one of the largest
if you
players
deliver on what your promises.
If we deliver on what we promise. But the key is that, number one, as we engage with each one of these customers, we're dealing with at least an annual, if not a multi-year contract of monthly recurring revenue that comes out of each deal,
mm-hmm.
right? The customer base that we have comes from years of having somewhere in the range of about 70% market share for digital media in Canada from some 7 Group,
mm-hmm.
right? There's not a lot of game companies. There's not a lot of animation and VFX companies that I can't call and don't have a trusted advisor technology relationship
with, yeah.
right? The other thing is that, you know, the old saying, is you can get something fast, you can get something cheap, you get something good, pick two.
Right.
Right. You get something good, it ain't going to be fast.
Right.
Right. You get something fast and good, it ain't going to be cheap.
Right.
Right. In our case, we get all three. Right. We've already done this multiple times with our customers, where we've done a apples to apples comparison between distributed cloud computing, commodity cloud, the AWS's and Google's, in fact, those exact companies, and Azure, and AMP. And we're less expensive by a substantial margin than those big players, but we're way faster.
Right.
Right. So, you know, if you're looking at Google Render as a solution as to how you're actually going to, you know, get this ad hoc render for your company and be able to do this sort of stuff, they charge one cent per vCPU per hour, right? If you sign up with AMP and you get dedicated, oh, that's for what's called a preemptible instance. That means that at any time, somebody can come along and kick your job off of the
really?
CPU and you have to start over again.
Good Lord.
It's actually five times as it's 5 cents per hour per vCPU for a dedicated CPU. Okay. So we compete against the preemptible CPUs and we came in less expensive. I won't say by how much. We came in less expensive than what Google was offering for a dedicated in the city near you fiber connected render farm that's you know designed specifically for your environment to do render for your movies and came in less expensive than preemptible instances from Google.
So I remember when blockchain was falling over. And all those guys that had raised all that money to buy all those, ant miners, suddenly got the religion about video rendering. Mm-hmm. They were like, oh, you know what? It's not efficient to mine Bitcoin anymore. Yeah. We'll just go over here and we'll just get DreamWorks to put their next animated feature through us. Not a single one of them pulled any rendering business at all. They didn't pull any AI business. They claimed they were going to do that. They didn't pull any video game hosting. They all said they were going to do that. They're all dead because they didn't have the connections.
That's a really good point.
To be able to just pick up the phone and say, hey, animation company X.
That wasn't the only reason. I would say the number one reason is, first of all, if you were doing Bitcoin, you were doing ASICs, not GPUs.
Right.
Not really useful for anything other than Bitcoin mining. Right. Number two, if you were doing Ethereum, and you're buying 1070 GPUs, right? Right now, the big studios, animation visual effects studios, are still CPU. They're still Xeon-based CPUs.
They're not even using GPUs.
They don't use GPUs.
Why is that? Right?
RenderMan doesn't run on a GPU, right? The applications that they use to render that stuff is not designed to run on a GPU.
So if a studio is using RenderMan, which they're all using pretty much,
so don't get me wrong, there are studios that are using GPUs and are experimenting with it and going quite far.
Well, was it Amazon that decided they were going to go into that market and create their own tool that they're going to force people to use? Which no one really was interested in.
Well, I mean, like they did Lumberyard for the video game side of things. They didn't, as far as render is concerned, I mean, Google Render kind of leads that sort of stuff. I think it's, what's it called? Google, whatever. And they have RenderMan licenses included on the instances, and they have, the V-Ray, whatever the tool is that they're using to do the render.
Mm-hmm.
But again, not designed to do render.
So, and if someone, let's say a client is interested in moving their things across to your system, having the ability to have the tools to do that is half the problem, right?
Well, number one, we do CPU.
Because you can't just suck it all down into a new server.
No. We build the same infrastructure they would build if they were building it in the studio.
Okay.
Right? It runs the same software they would use because we build it from bare metal up. So we're able to run whatever pipeline they have, whatever the tool set is that they use to make their movies, to make their video games, is the same tool set that runs on our infrastructure. And then we put it in the city where they are and give them a fiber connection to it. I mean, and we do it for less than Google charges.
And when they're not using it, we mine Bitcoin.
Well, yeah, well, no, we don't. We actually do, most of these things are dedicated, right? They're designed to be dedicated.
No one's kicking them off the system because Sony's got a job.
Nobody's kicking them off the system because Sony's got a job. That sort of happens.
Right.
Once
you've got them, you've ppretty much got them, right? Like, moving is a pain in the ass. That's a barrier to you getting clients. But once you've actually pulled them across, as long as you're delivering what you said you're going to do and for a price that's reasonable, it's hard to get out.
Yeah. Which
I think is the AWS business model, quite frankly. Sure. It's like, let's get you when you're little.
We call it cloud squatting.
Right.
Right. What happens is you have a company that wants to test something out, right? They want to run something, but they don't want to build all the infrastructure for it. They're not even sure if it's going to work. Right. They have a game that they want to launch. They don't know how many players they have.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to make that upfront investment. They just want to do something ad hoc.
Mm-hmm.
So they go and they get a couple of servers. They get a couple of virtual machines. They get a couple, 2 terabytes of data, and they put it on the cloud and they test it out. And hey, look, it works.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now that it's working, people start using it.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
Now people start using it, and it's really hard. It becomes harder and harder to make it work.
Right.
And it's less and less efficient. And don't get me wrong, they're still servicing those customers. The application is still running. you know, people are still using it.
But the trees aren't.
But it's
now
gotten ridiculously expensive.
Right.
The amount that Amazon charges for data transfer fees is like, you know, vastly more than you pay for an instance that you pay on Google. So, you know, it starts to get really expensive, but they're kind of like, well, we built it all. We used all their widgets, all their little, you know, applications and APIs, and geez, it's really going to be hard to get off this. So what we have as part of what we do at AMPT is something we call the Cloud Liberation Stack. So we basically employ the industry standard tools that they've always been using when they've been building it in-house in their own data centers.
Yep.
And we apply that on our infrastructure. On our virtualized.
So if you've got a guy who's like the AWS guy, mm-hmm. and you're paying him a bunch of money and you don't want to move because you've got a guy,
mm-hmm.
your guy can just go over here. Oh, this is the same shit.
Yeah, basically, a very large percentage of the applications that are kind of the, you know, the Amazon, you know, Redshift or whatever these little widgets are available as half the time open source.
Mm.
In other cases, they're not open source. They're the industry standard tool that they've been using for the last 20 years, mm-hmm. right? Pipeline tools and things that you use to be able to develop games and make movies are something that have evolved over time from the big companies like Autodesk and Pixar and all those sort of DreamWorks, etc. To be able to deploy that type of technology exactly as they've been using it and then still given that OpEx approach to the infrastructure, still have somebody manage it. Don't worry about it. You make your movie, you make your video game, I'll run your IT,
mm-hmm.
right? That's exactly what they wanted from AWS and Google. It's not what they got.
Right.
Because they have an AWS guy.
Right.
Right? They have to hire a whole bunch of new IT staff just to run all that.
Right.
What we give them is we give them the infrastructure they've always wanted, the way they've always wanted to do it. And we do it for less money.
It's a terrible business model. Who would ever do that?
Yeah.
All right, we're going to more or less wrap it up because this is a conversation that we could have for 2 hours and yeah. get into the techie weeds. But to bring it back to the market, describe for me, if you would, how this share structure looks coming out through Vashni Capital, who I give a lot of credit to because when you know, we've talked a lot over the last few years and we talked to some of the biggest deal guys in town.
Mm-hmm.
And
you introduced me.
Offered a lot of shells.
Yeah.
And eventually you were like, you know what? I've got experience with Vashni. They did a good job for Hemco. It's not going to be a big flashy promote. It's not going to be 200 million shares out.
Nope.
It's going to be nice and tight. And they have delivered one of the tightest little openings that I've seen.
We're pretty proud of that. I mean, we were put in a pretty good position. We came out at the right time. We had a lot of interested parties. We had the experience of having my wife's company go through the process with Vashni Capital, and we also had you to run some of these deal terms by and kind of
and to say not this guy.
We did get warned away in a few times, and uh-huh. that was quite helpful.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, here's where we're at. Okay, we're doing a $4 million raise for a non-offering prospectus. It's going public on the CSE, but it's a total of 44 million shares outstanding. We're 28. Million are escrowed by because they're owned by the management,
and the $4 million is got a 4 month hold. And the shell stock
shares, the free trading shares when we go public are the 4 million shares that we're selling to go public with. The shell, you know, I mean, I
can't. So a lot of deals when they go public, the shell money is the dangerous money, yeah. right? Because when everyone else is on their 4 month hold or their 6 month hold. The shell guys that got in for a half cent are blowing things out, saying thank you very much for your interest,
the case
market.
In our case either. I won't get into the exact details of the escrow. I don't know, if I'm allowed to, but mm-hmm. let's just say that there's
you got to deliver on this thing before you're making money off it.
That's right. And there's nobody that's there's not going to be that dump, that usual dip that you get when you first go public of the shell shares mm-hmm. going to market.
Mm-hmm.
We've put a structure together that's very tight. Now, what we're doing at the moment is we went out and raised the first $3 million. Of the four that we're going public with, that's in escrow and, you know, in the bank and closed.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing the last million with Stockhouse.
Okay.
Stockhouse is a new platform, that they're just launching. We're on the Stockhouse platform. I think it's called the deal room.
Mm-hmm.
And, we're kind of like the launch
the phase two of it?
Yeah, well, they're kind of leveraging. There's a lot of really good hype around what we're doing right now, and so they're kind of leveraging that to help launch the platform as well. So there's going to be videos and blogs and all that sort of stuff that they're putting on there, and we'll be doing that last million through them. So the offering's at 35 cents. 4 million is what the total raise is. 3 is already gone. Only 1 million left. We're imminently going public. I mean, we're right at the end of that process. Mm-hmm. So it won't be out available for very long. You can right now you can go on to Stockhouse and buy shares at 35 cents if you're an accredited investor.
I have no problem promoting the deal room because it was my idea. find his feet. actually, the deal room is a good sit. The money is made in the go public financings in a lot of deals, right? You're getting a cheaper stock because you've got a little bit of a hold. It might not go public for X number of months. So you're taking a little bit more risk. But, you know, for people that have never really considered getting into a private placement financing because that's for the inside guys, if you earn $200,000 a year, you're one of the inside guys.
I think it's only 150.
I think it's 200.
Is it?
Yeah. Or if you've got $1 million in liquid assets or 300,000 with your wife.
Yeah.
There might be a few guys out there that goes through on that one.
Yeah.
But it's if you're getting that early stock, you're getting it for a reasonable price. What's the valuation on this round?
12 million.
So 12 million for a tech company that hits all the checks. And I've got to say as well, I've walked you through some investor conferences over the last year.
Yeah.
And, you do the 10-minute pitch, and at the end of it, people's are picking their jaws up from the, like, it's
nice of you to say.
It's a rock star pitch, right? Because everyone's like, esports. And you sort of say, well, okay, so how are you going to make money on that? And they're like, here's how you make money on it. Either you own the game, which means you own all the revenue streams, or you own the infrastructure that it runs on. And goodness sakes, like it's like buying into Edison and electricity utility in 1920.
Yeah,
I look at it as
the new telco, the new infrastructure provider for digital.
And I got to tell you, like companies like TELUS and Shaw, they are closing up shop on a lot of what they offer. Like cable TV is dead. I know a lineman for TELUS, and he's like, man, they're not bringing in any more guys on the cable TV side.
Everyone closed both of the data centers that they had in Vancouver.
They're just selling fiber optic now that they should have been selling 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But they're more or less just trying to get as many people as they can on that system as a backup, because then 5G is going to come and reinvent the whole damn thing.
Well, look, they're still going to be the last mile providers, right? These are the guys that are going to be deploying 5G.
Yep.
These are the guys that are putting the fiber in the ground.
Yep.
Right? But they need something to connect to. And so, we're a big TELUS partner. TELUS is one of the other members of the digital technology supercluster, for example, that we work with.
Just quickly, I want to get into the makeup of the tech supercluster. Like, we're a member of it. There's hundreds of members of it. But the board of founding...
So they have these founding members, right?
So you've got Canfor, and you've got, Rogers.
GE.
Boeing, Microsoft.
TELUS, Microsoft.
Shoppers Drug Mart is the little guy on the list. And then there's one more little guy. Who's that?
Amped. I'm one of the founding members. I do sit on the board.
You're the only one that doesn't have $100 million plus market cap yet.
We're the SME. In that, it's kind of neat.
You're the IT department for the supercluster.
we'd like to say that. We'd like them.
But
to
none
say
of those
that.
Companies are doing what you do. They're not infrastructure guys, right? So if Boeing and TELUS have a project that they want to get matching funds from the government for, we need someone to put the computers in the room.
We are the high performance computing specialist in the supercluster. I do sit on the board. I am a found. This AMPT is a founding member. I sit on the executive committee as well. It's amazing. You go to these board meetings and it's like, it's GE and TELUS and Boeing and Microsoft.
You know what you're getting out of this? You're getting
a
seat.
The Illuminati cable.
You're getting a seat on the space shuttle when they abandon Earth.
Yeah,
you're like, we've got to bring Anthony Brown. He'll run the computers for us. the IT crowd in the basement of the Mars Hilton.
that's one way of looking at it for sure.
All right. Well, this has been a long podcast. I think we could have gone a lot longer because there's a lot of stuff on. But I want to say that the reason that you're the first deal that we've walked into the markets as a group, and I it took a long time for me to get to a place where I felt comfortable that I was dealing with someone who actually does the work, who actually understands the business, who is respected not just by the people in the market, but people in the industry that he deals in, people in government. I know you're sent out to do like trips to Asia representing BC and Canada.
I got the chance to be the industry champion or investment champion for the video game industry for G-Star in Korea.
Which is nuts.
Which was nuts. Totally nuts.
And you're hijacking the damn thing, showing MechWarrior footage.
Doing the keynote speech at a $250,000 person conference in Busan, South Korea. That's an experience everybody should
and
have.
And here you are with a play that is on trend in the hot sector that no one's been able to figure out yet, but everyone knows they're going to be in, where there's literal hundreds of millions of dollars sitting waiting for a good deal. And you're coming out with a $12 million valuation with business partners like Boeing.
Well, this is how you avoid dilution. This is how you set it up so that, look.
You're not out there raising $40 million.
You saw some of the other deals that came our way.
Sure.
Right? And
you could have taken a lot more money.
You could have taken a lot more money out of the gate. But what we would have ended up with was a company that would have made me some money. When my stock sells, but would I really actually be the guy that gets to achieve these things? Would my team actually be the team that builds this next internet, this amazing thing that we want to build?
Mm-hmm.
Not so sure. This structure allows us to do that. This structure allows us to maintain control and therefore maintain control over our own destiny and be able to achieve the goals that we set out for it, not do the big giant up and down that happened with crypto and will happen with cannabis. And, we want to be able to be the safe bet, be the ones that
I was always like really, really, focused on, reminding you that the best deals are the deals. It's a baseball trade. The best baseball trade is the trade in which everyone thinks they got the best deal. Right? It's not where someone gets cleaned out by somebody else, because you never do business with that guy again.
Yeah.
And the best go to public is one where everybody involved, from the guys that were in early to the founders to the guys putting the deal together to the first people in the market and in on the stock,
mm-hmm.
are there to make money and are all being looked after and are all rowing in the same direction.
Yeah.
And holy fuck, could this market learn that lesson a little bit more recently? Because especially in the cannabis space, nothing goes public unless someone's pulling $40 million out the back door of it in an industry where no one's making any money yet. Esports, I see so many esports deals, and when you get down to the facts of them, there's no possibility of making money. That's just going to drive the market away from things like this that are actual real.
One of the really important things with an infrastructure play is that all the money that you generate in profit, all the money that you make from all these customers goes back into building more infrastructure.
Right. Because what you're building is a utility. You're not building a shop.
That's right.
Right.
It doesn't go out. It doesn't go out to the CEOs and CTOs and whatnot of the business. It goes into getting more cores under management.
Right.
More infrastructure. More games running on your platform.
More staff.
More
delivering more people. Yeah, more clients.
Mean, we start out as a picks and shovels play, a infrastructure play, But as the platform proliferates, as you see with all the large platforms that already exist out there, Amazon has Amazon Prime,
mm-hmm.
Google has YouTube, mm-hmm. Microsoft has Microsoft Games. There's going to be a content.
Everything moves to content, along,
right? And at some point, that's what we're going to see with Apt. I mean, it's not something that's coming out of the gate. There's no announcements that are
you got to build it first.
No,
but what I do like is every time I talk to you, you're like, oh, have I talked to you about this company that we're doing this deal with? Have I talked to you? And it's not like I got to go and look that company up. No. It's like, really, that company?
Yeah.
Because I got a lot of millennial investors here, and that company creates a thing that they all really like a lot.
I wish I could tell you all of the companies right now, but we have to save that stuff for when it goes public.
Yeah.
That's when you want to make the announcement when it impacts the stock.
Well, that's true.
Right?
It's true. And all those deals take a while to close. But
yeah.
I think that,
look, the ones that you already that are out there,
they're fully legit.
I mentioned that the digital twinning project with Boeing and Avcor.
I like that you're going to have a lot of news flow based on not like, hey, we made $50,000 here and $50,000. Like news flow that includes large companies that are happy to put their name on your news release.
Yeah.
Is a big differentiator. Honest to God, so I got some free stock from helping you through this process.
You did, yeah.
I still went out and bought more.
Yeah, I know.
Because it's too good a deal.
You got the Mackie email.
I didn't get enough from it.
Yeah, got the Mackie email and went, hey, look, I bought 20 grand more. It's awesome.
It was 12 minutes too cheap. I got to get in on that. Look, I got people waiting for me. This has gone way over time.
No worries.
But look, I would imagine that AMP is going to be public within the next few months. Would that be reasonably accurate?
That's we can say that, yes.
And the Stockhouse deal room raise is on right now. You've got $1 million of space there.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if there aren't a few people out there that didn't gobble most of that up.
Yeah, it's going
to
go.
Because it won't be this cheap again. Honest to God, I love a deal where when it's going public, you look at the price and say, well, that's cheap. That makes sense. Well, as opposed to, $200 million. It's a lot of promise.
We're not going to take more down than the $4 million.
Right.
Right. That's the key, is that $4 million.
You could have taken a lot more down, right? I know there's a lot of people screaming
absolutely. There is.
But you're leaving that last million open for guys through Stockhouse, which I think is a good move. You're going to expand the shareholder base.
It gives us a little bit more of the open market rather than just the brokers and the insiders.
Right.
We wanted to be able to have that ability to before we actually go public, start talking to the public, and that kind of gave us that platform to do it with.
Well, look, you've done a year of doing the investor conference circuit, and the response has been really good. I know there are
we'll be at the next one on the 24th in September.
There are guys out there who are putting other deals together that have contacted you to try and advise them on what would be a good play. So I think that's a really good sign. And, your track record as a family, you've already got one good exit. You've got a wife behind you who will pull you up if you try and do the wrong thing. I think that's I love it when a plan comes together and this feels like something that's going to not just be good for people that are investing in AMPT. And I say that as someone who's ultra conflicted. But I think this is actually going to be really good for the sector. I think it's going to be really good to sort of put esports in a place where realistically, it's not esports that is the potential. It's content.
Yes.
And it's content delivery, which is what you've got. It's content creation, which is also, an area that you have an interest in. That's going to be the thing.
Our technology is used to create the content, and our technology is used to deliver that content.
Right.
Right. We're not making, it's not us that's making the content, at least not.
No, but you're facilitating it. You're like, you're not the streamer, you're the Twitter. Yeah. You're the Twitch, right?
Yeah, that's right.
I don't think you want to worry about competing against Google Stadia, because that seems like a throwdown response that hasn't been really thought out.
I think they needed to announce something at GDC.
Yeah. Everyone's got their plan for console as a on the cloud.
Look, there's been OnLive. What was the other one? Gaikai. There's been a lot of companies that have come and gone saying that they're going to deliver this Netflix of video game experience.
Right.
It's not, it's the first guys to try
and never the guys that deliver. I remember Real Player.
Yeah.
Real Player. Where's Real Player now, right?
Well, it's just not possible LimeWire to supply that type of service on the infrastructure that exists today.
Right.
So we have to build some more.
And if you own the means of delivery, you own everything. If we've learned nothing else from
that's
revolution. All right, man, we're going to wrap it up here and let you go with your day.
Thank you very much, Chris. It was great talking with you.
I mean, look, we'll get you back before the public hammer drops, but I'd be really interested to see what the response is on your raise.
Yeah.
And just keep doing what you're doing, man. Every time I meet you, it's like, oh, yeah, and we did this thing. Did I tell you about this thing? Oh, my God, I got this thing. Wow, and you're like pulling your hair out in happiness, which is freaking great.
It's exciting times for sure.
All right. Talk soon.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look. See you next time.
Thanks for listening. For disclosure statements and more info, please visit www.equity.guru.